Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We teach girls to shrink themselves, to make themselves smaller. We say to girls, you can have ambition, but not too much. You should aim to be successful, but not too successful. Otherwise, you will threaten the man. Because I am female, I'm expected to aspire to marriage. I'm expected to make my life choices, always keeping in mind that marriage is the most important.
Well, that was my special guest giving her We Should All Be Feminists TED Talk, which was viewed more than 5 million times online and later sampled by Beyoncé on her 2013 single Flawless, which you heard there. She is one of the world's most revered writers, and books like Americana and Half of a Yellow Sun have gained her international acclaim. She was the recipient of the 2007 Women's Prize for Fiction, the 2018 Penn Pinter Prize, and recognised as one of the BBC's 100 Women of 2021. Her powerful oratory, often on contentious subjects, has made her a global success. Her first TED Talk is in the top 25 most viewed of all time. But her latest work takes a different form. It's called Mama's Sleeping Scarf, and is her first foray into children's literature. Welcome, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie.
Thank you so much, Mariela. It's lovely to talk to you.
Yes, I'm very excited to have you here. It's been a long, I think I might have last talked to you when you published Half of a Yellow Sun, and that was, yeah, a little while ago, let's just say that, shall we? your latest, as I've said, is a children's book, and most of what you've written in the past isn't really children's territory, as it were. So I gather that this one was inspired first by an issue that most parents listening out there are going to absolutely empathise with, which is the impossibility of getting children today to read. But the other inspiration was the passing of your parents in rather sad and quick succession a couple of years ago.
Yes, yes. I was very much a daddy's girl, and you know, losing my father was very difficult. And then my mother died a few months later, and I was close to both parents. And so it was really difficult. It still is. And so I think, you know, I wanted to find a way to honor them. I'm finding all kinds of ways to honor them. And so one of those ways was to write this children's book as Moi Grace James, which means daughter of Grace and James. My parents were Grace and James. But also having a daughter, I thought it was also quite lovely to write this book for my daughter and also as a daughter. My daughter is going to be 8 in a few weeks, and I have been a little worried about her interesting lack of passion for reading.
You could see it as an act of revolution, of course, or revolt.
You know, I choose not to, only because while I very much admire acts of revolt, I think in general they're supposed to be good for you. I'm not sure that turning away from reading is good for anyone.
No, absolutely. But I mean, I wonder if, you know, it's twofold. Listen, I spent my whole life, as you know, delving into the world of books, and I have exactly the same issue. And, you know, my children are most likely, you know, I'm most likely to say to my children, not now, I'm reading, you know, which I think sends pretty bad signals. But of course, there's all the other distractions out there as well. And I suppose that, you know, an awful lot of the most popular children's books were written quite a long time ago and might not reflect children's lives today as much as perhaps they need to.
Well, I think, I mean, I've always felt very strongly that children need to see themselves in books. When I was growing up, I read a lot of books that were, you know, American or British, and I loved them. But what it did to me was it made me think that books were things that were about experiences unfamiliar to me. And I think it's changing a bit now.
Were you eager to play lacrosse and have picnics with, you know, lemonade?
Yes, I adored Enid Blyton. And so for a long time, I was fascinated by ginger beer. and sort of the Famous Five in particular. I wanted to go on adventures and sort of, you know, catch smugglers and dungeons and that kind of thing and eat cucumber sandwiches. But writing this book wasn't so much about wanting my child to see herself reflected in a book, because we are fortunate now to have books in which, you know, there are a diverse range of children. But I do think that, you know, there's a particular sort of joy in seeing experiences that are very familiar to you, and not just seeing people who look like you. So she reads books in which the children are Black, but I don't think we've read a book in which the child is Nigerian and Igbo like us.
I mean, you said that you've written it under a pseudonym, though your own name is also on the front jacket. And I'm sure that publishers will have had a hand in that, if nobody else, because, you know, your name carries a lot of weight, yes, as they say. But you said that it was to honour your parents, which is, you know, a wonderful instinct. But I was struck by that because I thought, don't you feel you've already honoured them by, you know, becoming with your family name, you know, and a globally iconic figure as both an author and a campaigner? I mean, if you were my daughter, then I think I would be completely honoured, amazed and proud.
No, I don't think that one can ever really honour one's parents enough, especially if they were good parents. I mean, obviously. But I think it's about honouring them, but it's also in some ways an act of grief. I think one of the things about grieving that I've discovered is that there's a kind of terror of forgetting, and also a kind of dealing with guilt, I think. So I think I was mostly a good daughter, but I found myself questioning how good a daughter I was. And so this is also in some ways my way of grieving. You know, I want to remember them. I want my daughter to remember them because they adored her. I want to remind myself, or maybe I want to console myself and tell myself that I wasn't such a bad daughter.
Well, I think I find it very hard to believe that you were, but you know, this is also, I discovered only very recently, not your first name change, as it were. Why have you been trying to lose yourself ever since you were a child?
Well, that's an interesting way of putting it. Now I'm thinking, Mariela, that I might need therapy for that. Yes, this is true. My name is Chimamanda, and it's a name that I gave myself. But it's also really, in some ways, it's not so much about losing myself, I think. I think it's about reclaiming who I really am. And so when I was younger, I had an English name, which I will not tell you. And
Come on. It's just you and me here.
Of course. I didn't want to be, I started to feel that it wasn't me, if that makes sense. And I just decided to change my name and give myself this name that also has a lovely meaning in Igbo. It means my God will not fall down, which I also like to think means that my spirit is indestructible.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Put that to the test, haven't you, over the last decade or so. You know, I mentioned in the introduction your incredible campaigning, both on behalf of every woman who wants to see an equitable place, a female-shaped space in the world, as I keep calling it. But also, you know, in terms of, you know, being foisted with a single story as a child and so many issues. You've spoken quite vociferously about cancel culture as well. You've said that a trans woman is a trans woman. And all of those things have caused controversy in different pockets of opinion, haven't they? You know, whether it was in your native Nigeria or elsewhere in the world. What gave you the courage to put your head above the parapet and to do so over and over? I mean, I've seen some really hideous stuff, you know, people threatening machetes. And I mean, I don't even want to go into it and give them airtime. But, you know, it's a difficult thing.
I really love that expression, a female-shaped world. Did you say a female-shaped space or female-shaped world?
Well, I'd like the latter, but I think at least a female-shaped space would be a good start.
Yes. I think that's quite a lovely. I might steal that, Mariana. You know, I don't set out to provoke. I never have. It's not something I enjoy. Right, the idea of provoking just to provoke. But I don't remember a time when I didn't speak my mind. You know, I was the child who said what I thought. And I was also the child who would think about things and ask questions and want to learn and want things to make sense. And I think I have a bit of a messiah complex as well, unfortunately. I want to save the world. I want the world to be fairer and better, you know, all of those things. And yes, I think we now live in a world where it's difficult to have good faith conversations about many things. And so the positions that I have taken and that I stand by the way, I haven't come from a desire to offend. They've come from feeling that truth matters, that justice matters, all of those things. And I try very hard to stay away from social media and from what I like to call the noise, because I think that it's very easy for one to become... I guess for your spirit to become broken, because you know it's difficult to be a public figure. It's difficult to sort of feel that you're. There's a lovely quote I remember from Thomas Hardy about his reviews and how he said a person has to be mad or something to constantly sort of rise up and be a target for other people. But it comes with the territory, and you know it's important to me to speak about what I feel strongly about.
You know, as you say, it comes with the territory, but it doesn't have to. There's lots of novelists out there who don't speak up, and we've seen the worst that can happen, you know, with Salman Rushdie last year. You know, it's not a danger to be treated as inconsequential, is it? Mm. So what is it that is the motivation, just that you want to change the world?
Mm. It is, honestly. I think it would actually be lovely to be in a position of just being a writer who's completely and utterly quote unquote harmless. But that's not who I am. That's not, as my Igbo people say, that's not what my ancestors want me to be. I really do not know a time when I wasn't like this. I think I must have been an annoying child in primary school because, you know, I was always sort of, you know, questioning things and asking my teachers and feeling that I was sort of on a crusade for justice and that kind of thing. So it's, and they're two very separate things for me. My fiction writing, what I like to call my creative soul, is very different from the part of me that wants the world to be just and fair. And I do have to say that the creative part matters more to me, nourishes me more. But the other part is also important. I cannot sit silent if I think something is wrong, right? And I think that maybe I could contribute in some way. And even if I don't end up making it better, I think I sleep better at night knowing that I tried.
You've got as we've mentioned, and you've written a book for her, a seven-year-old daughter. And before she was born, one of the pieces of nonfiction you wrote was a feisty letter to a friend who'd had a daughter about how she should bring her up as a feminist. You know, and, I mean, it was instructive, but, you know, also loving, obviously. But it was quite utopian, I think, in a way. Once you've had a child of your own, have you revised your stance at all?
No, not at all. I think that we must always make room for slices of utopia in the way that we live our lives. No, I wrote that before I had my daughter. And of course, you know, when I had my daughter, I realized, my goodness, you know, it's easy to pontificate to people who are parents when you're not a parent yourself. And so raising my daughter made me realize that I had all of these suggestions for how to raise a child, a girl. And I believe in all of them still. The only thing I would add, if I were to revise that pamphlet, would be to add after each suggestion, by the way, it's really difficult. It sometimes feels as though, you know, the world, there's a conspiracy, the world is engaged in an active conspiracy to make things difficult for a person who wants to raise their daughter to be, you know, in some ways, the opposite of everything that is considered conventional. You know, I don't want my daughter to practice likability or to think that her role in life is, you know, because she's a girl, that her role in life is sort of secondary, you know. And it's difficult because there's just, you know, the world is as it is, I guess. But it's not impossible, I don't think. So I'm trying very hard. So is my husband. And we've just decided that we'll do our best. And then, you know, we'll hope that she turns out okay.
So what do you think are the greatest challenges facing girls growing up today as compared to, you know, when you and I, you were younger than me, though, grew up? You know, one of the things you liked the phrase woman-shaped space or female-shaped space. And I, you know, I came up with that idea when thinking about women in the workplace because, you know, the whole of women's sort of biological journey is treated like a bit of an encumbrance. You know, it's something that has to be factored in and, you know, tolerated but not necessarily embraced and so on. And actually, if you think about it, you know, creating a working environment that women can fit into that's flexible enough to deal with childbearing and, you know, all of the other things that women have to deal with from periods to menopause. It just makes sense. It makes for a healthier workforce. It's economically, it makes sense. And yet, you know, the idea that you would do that still feels one that's very much resisted despite all the economic imperatives and so on. So, do you think that we live still in a time of sort of institutionalized misogyny that gets overlooked because of many other issues?
Oh, absolutely. I think we live in a world that is just utterly drenched in misogyny. And I don't say that to be dramatic. I think it is true. And I think the workplace, you know, all over the world is just not designed for women. There's a wonderful book called Invisible Women, which I read some years ago. And it's, you know, these are things that one knows, you know, just observing the world, but it's so jarring to see example after example about how so much of the world just isn't designed for women or to aid women or to include women. And it's interesting that you talk about, sort of pregnancy and things like that, because I think when I was younger, I've always felt very strongly about women's equality. But when I was younger, I hadn't quite understood how much, sort of a woman's body shapes her options and her choices. And now that I am sort of at the grand old age of 40, I'm 46. I'm going to be 46.
Baby.
I think about that a lot because, I'm now at a stage where it's not just that I'm a mother, it's also that, my body is doing things that, shape my choices and my options. I suffer now from really sort of near debilitating premenstrual issues. I don't know if it's because it's gotten much worse, right? And increasingly, it's made me think about these things, in addition to, of course, sort of searching the internet, looking for things that I can take, because it seems to me that formal medicine doesn't really pay attention to things of that sort, premenstrual issues, menopausal issues. I go to a gynecologist and they say to me, well, why don't we put you on birth control pills? And I'm thinking, that's the only thing you have? Really? We can perform the most delicate surgeries on the human brain and we can't figure out how to make a woman be more comfortable before her period. Really? I just find that really interesting. And so these are things I think about. And of course, many examples, how pregnancy, studies have shown when we talk about the pay gap between men and women, it's not so much that they're evil men sitting there saying we will pay women less, although, that also exists. It's mostly that women, when they get pregnant and have children, automatically fall off the ladder. Because the workplace is designed for that to happen.
You're described as a campaigner, but not as, a thinker. I'm sure if you were a man, the fact that you've written all of these, in some ways academic papers on things that are of concern right now in the world, perhaps there'd be a bit more of the T word applied to your name. Do you ever feel frustrated in that way?
No, I try not to think about it, but I think it's not so much about, I think, yes, it's partly about being a woman, but I think it's also because I'm interested in things concerning women. And I think if I had been a woman and I was concerned about, I don't know what, AI or something, sort of thing, I think is really a waste of time, personally. I think I would be more likely to be called a thinker. There's a sense in which to talk about women's issues is still considered not so much rabble rousing, but that you're a campaigner, which is a stupid word. I think I don't really look myself up, so I'm a bit disappointed to know that I'm considered a campaigner.
I'll call you a thinker. Okay, we'll start with one person, and we can change the world. I was, though, struck. You mentioned a quote from Hardy about reading reviews, and I was struck. I mean, you come from an academic family. You'll have been used to the idea of, critical thinking and approach novels by other people from that point of view. But I think you also, despite the fact that, we've talked about the awful social media stuff, you don't read reviews. Is that right?
No, I don't. I don't. No, I haven't read a review since my first novel was published.
They're really good. That's all I'd let
you know. Well, that's good to know. But the thing about this is one of the thing about being a creative person, I think, is that there's a fragility there, isn't it? And I worry that it doesn't matter how good it is, that I will most probably fixate on the one line that is not good. And because there is a bit of a fighter in me, that I might then find myself responding to that line in the next thing I write, if that makes sense. And I just don't want that. I don't want to have somebody else's voice in my head. I just don't want that. And so I don't think I will ever read reviews because it's kind of too late. I haven't read them in years, and I just don't see myself ever reading them.
I mentioned earlier, you know, the fact that you've lifted your head above the parapet when it comes to, well, I suppose the trans debate, cancel culture, all of those things. I mean, do you feel that, in a way, the huge amount of discourse around those issues has taken attention away from the fact that across the globe, you know, there is still impossible inequality for the majority of women, that, you know, what we have here in the Western world, and indeed, I'm sure, in Nigeria, is a hell of a lot better than it is in most places?
Well, yes. Actually, I just remembered something about reviews. Just thinking about it now, that yeah. I do have a friend who, and I've warned her to stop, but from time to time she'll send me one line from a review, which is usually intended to annoy me. And so, and because it's sort of, you know, there's no context for it. You know, I read it and I'm like, what the hell? Don't do this anymore. Anyway, I just thought about that. When it comes to thinking about women, I mean, obviously I'm Nigerian. I have two homes. I live in Nigeria. I also live in the US. And so it gives me a kind of perspective, I think. And, you know, I come from a place where, because I was born female, I cannot inherit property today in 2023. Right? In Nigeria, if you're married to a man who's not Nigerian, as a woman, you cannot give him Nigerian citizenship. But if you're a man, you can give a woman citizenship. I mean, so the things that just seem, you know, sort of archaic are still very much present in Nigeria, which is a country that I think, in terms of women's rights, in the context of Africa, is not even the worst. And then there's Afghanistan. I mean, I've been reading a lot about Iran and Afghanistan, just so inspired by the women there. But we have to remember that what's happening there is, you know, it's almost medieval. Actually, it is. And but this is not to say that I don't think that the issues that women in the US, in the UK, in Western Europe have should be diminished, because I think they are still serious. They might not be as dramatic, but they're still there. And so my point is that I do not think that there's anywhere in the world where we've even come close to achieving equality for men and women.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.